Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Sasha Pfeiffer. During our weekend review this hour, we talked about the status of gun control legislation in the aftermath of the Sandy Hook shootings. There is now breaking news that there has been another shooting at a high school in Colorado. It's Arapahoe High School in Centennial, Colorado, which is in the Littleton School District. All of those schools in that district are now in lockdown. In fact, we're looking at screens in the studio of high schoolers being filed out of the school with hands on their heads. This shooting and all these other school shootings have created a lot of discussion about what is the cause of this kind of tragedy and whether video games that depict graphic violence may play a role.
We know that the Newtown shooter, for example, Adam Lanza, was a loner who played violent video games. So was that a factor? Well, the answer to those kinds of questions are not straightforward, nor are the politics.
Massachusetts lawmakers have proposed legislation to study that question. But video game companies say the bill contains inflammatory language like killing games and rampage. They also say years of studies have shown no causal link between watching violence in the media and real violence.
So we're going to focus on that question now. Does watching violent video games provoke real violence? Joining us is Dr. Michael Rich. He's director of the Center on Media and Health at Boston Children's Hospital. He's also a former filmmaker and a pediatrician who has studied this issue extensively. And Dr. Michael Rich, good to have you. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
Also with us is Dr. Gene Baresson. He's a psychiatrist and executive director of the Clay Center for Young Healthy Minds at Mass General Hospital. And Gene Baresson, welcome to you. Good to have you as well.
Nice to be here. Thanks.
I should say welcome back to both of you. We've had the pleasure of having you both on this show in the past. And let me start with you, Michael Rich. You've been very outspoken on this, committed to getting parents and the public to understand the pervasiveness and dangerous effects of violent video games and other violent media. What does the research really tell us about this very basic question, about the link between violent video and real violence?
Well, first of all, we've got to say it's not causal right up front. And I think that chasing causality is really a red herring, because in health, we deal with relative risks of things. In fact, we don't even have a causal link between smoking tobacco and lung cancer yet, but the preponderance of evidence shows a powerful relationship between the two. Hmm. What we do see from the collection of the research that we have done around the world and over really five decades now is one or more of three relationships. The first is an increase in fear and anxiety in the young people who are exposed to violence in media. The second is a desensitization, which is pretty consistent across those who use and consume these media. And the third, and actually the least prevalent of these three outcomes, is that some kids, and we don't know who they are in advance, have increased risk of increased aggression in thought and in behavior.
Mm. So no direct causal relationship, but Gene Baresson, the idea that while there might not be a causal relationship, we know that, for instance, secondhand cigarette smoke is linked pretty closely to increased risk of cancer. Is that the kind of risk we're talking about?
It could be, but we really don't know. I mean, the truth is that there are millions and millions of kids that play violent games. And since the 1990s, there's been a dramatic decrease in violence and aggression among youth in large populations. I agree with Michael that what we're really looking at is what are some factors that might be implicated. And there may well be certain youth who are negatively affected by this, but the preponderance of the evidence just doesn't tell us very much. Even the studies on desensitization and aggression, they're done like for 2 weeks of time after watching something with like foghorns. What does that tell us about real life? What does it tell us about the trajectory, about the long-term effects of this? We just don't know. We need a lot more long-term research that's done in a thoughtful and methodological, you know, way. Mm.
So we need more research. And I want to talk to you about this then, because there's a proposed bill on Beacon Hill calling for the study of violent video games and whether they lead to actual violence. The industry opposes it. They claim it's unnecessary because we already know that years of research has been inconclusive. Michael Rich, what's your view? Is this particular bill a good idea?
I would say that this particular bill, while I think is politically poorly written, is needed only in a broader sense, in the sense that we...
Wait, I'm just going to stop you right there. Okay. Poorly written because it's a little bit...
Because it's inflammatory.
It's inflammatory.
And it's narrow. All right. And it's looking simply at violence.
Yeah.
I think that we, particularly as a state that is one of the leaders in the video game creation industry, need to know a lot more about how video games and all interactive media affect us, how we are changed by them. We've got an industry now that makes a lot of money in entertainment. They want to move into education now. And they are saying, kids relate to games. We're going to gamify curriculum. But we don't know how these games teach. And what we need to do is look more broadly at them and say, if they teach, how do they teach? Mm-hmm. And if they do teach, can they teach violence as well as calculus? Mm.
Gene.
Well, I think that the legislation is in some ways misguided, because I agree with Michael that it is extraordinarily narrow. You know, one of the things that's the most important is, no matter what we do in legislation, what the parents allow, what the parents know, what happens at home, what's going on in the family may be much more important than actually the content of a game. I mean, you're certainly going to allow a kid who's got straight A's and plays on the soccer team and is helping the homeless play a violent video game. You may not let a kid who's had a history of aggression and hurting other people and is way out of bounds. So what I would like to see in this kind of study is, what can we do to effectively educate parents, teachers, clinicians, and kids? You know, kids now, 90% of kids have, middle school and high school kids have smartphones. They can abuse those smartphones. They can reach sites that they've never reached before. And we're not educating them. So I think a legislation like this should be much broader and go beyond just violent video games.
So Michael Rich, if you could design a sort of the new study that would be encouraged by legislation, what would it do? Does what Gene Bereson just described there sound like the right approach?
I think so. We in fact have a study designed, and which we have run in Manchester, New Hampshire, for the last several years, which looks more broadly at all the media and all the experiences and activities kids have on a very intensive way over a week every year, along with a whole host of health outcomes. This is the kind of study we need to really understand how media interact with us, how they teach us, how they change us, and whether there are long-term effects of those. It's something akin to the Framingham Heart Study, if you will. And that's where we really need to go. I mean, if you think about it, with the amount of time we spend with media, with the amount of attention we give to them, they are the new environmental health influence for the 21st century. And we better understand how they work on us and apply them in ways that we want them to work on us. And that's one place where I disagree with Dr. Bereson. He said, you know, parenting is more important than content. I think they go hand in hand. I think that parenting is part of choosing content. And we have to remember that kids are learning and being shaped by every experience they have, including their virtual experiences. And I personally don't want my child to be desensitized. I don't even want my child to be at risk of being desensitized, even if it only happens to 4% of all kids. But that's my choice as a parent. And I think that that information and those strategies should be in the hands of the parents.
Well, let's talk, though, about how the industry or the government can encourage the industry to give parents the tools they need to sort of help manage this. What should happen in terms of regulating the sale of violent video games? I mean, currently the games have a rating system that's supposed to guide parents about what's appropriate or not for their kids, right? Is that enough, Gene?
Well, there are a lot of problems with the way the system is set up right now.
Yeah.
For example, we're the only country in the world in which the industry regulates itself. The ratings, which are supposedly very important, are done by a bunch of 20-year-olds that are chosen by the industry, given segments of games by the industry, and then they rate them. And when they're rating violence, they don't rate certain factors. When we did our study at Mass General, parents wanted to know that the goals of the violence, the context of the violence, and the target of the violence. They're not even examined under the rubric of what violence means. So number one, I would want the – and every other country in the world – the government sets up an independent agency to look at the games and play the full 50 hours of the game. So, one, the rating system needs to change. Two, where I disagree with Michael is that some kids are, we don't know that kids are desensitized. I mean, millions and millions of kids play these games all the time. And in fact, there are more pro-social behaviors now among adolescents than in a long time. There are more kids volunteering to do community and social work and good things. So on a broad basis, but where I do agree with him is we don't know that risky group of kids who could be negatively affected. And that is where content and choice do come hand in hand.
Mm. So, Michael Rich, what should happen in terms of regulating the signs, the regulating the sale of violent video games? What's your view on this? Is the current rating system enough?
No. As Gene said, this is akin to asking a butcher whether the meat is safe. What they're doing is they're rating them as a way of doing two things. First of all, to keep the government off their back in terms of censorship or restrictions. And second of all, it's a marketing tool for them. They play to certain markets, and an M-rated game is very different than a T-rated game, than an E-rated game. And so I think that we need to take a step back and educate and empower us as consumers. And perhaps if the government should get involved, they should get involved with setting up something akin to what they have in the European Union and other countries, which is an independent body of experts in child development, in gaming, in technology, to really look at these things and rate them for how they're going to affect and change us. You know, in a way, we have a huge system in place in this country to protect our food supply, and so that we can walk down the aisle of a supermarket and know exactly what we're putting into our kids' bodies. We don't have that for what we're putting into our kids' minds.
Mm. We have about a minute left, so I want to give you each, you know, maybe 30 seconds or so for this sort of final question. It's a big, confusing world out there for parents with regard to this issue. When they think about violent video games and what their kids are doing, what's the best advice on this issue? Gene Barrison, let me start with you.
First, I think parents need to know their kids. They need to talk with their kids. They need to know what their kids are doing. I would say they should minimize the kinds of... First of all, they need to minimize the amount of video and digital media that they have and access to without parental controls. Parents also need to be educated. There are some wonderful websites, GetNetWise, Kids First, Commons Health Media, where they can actually get very good information. And as clinicians, I think we and the media are responsible. We need to be taking media histories as part of... pediatricians, child psychiatrists should be taking this as part of our histories so we can actually work with them clinically.
Mm. Michael Rich, a final word to you.
I think parents have to recognize, first of all, that their kids are spending more time in the digital domain than they're spending in IRL, in real life, with them, and that they need to enter that space and not to be scared of it. They need to know this information. And ultimately, they have to recognize that every experience their child has builds their body of knowledge about the world and the way they should behave in it. And they should choose wisely what they want to expose their children to.
That's Dr. Michael Rich. He's the director of the Center on Media and Health at Boston's Children's Hospital. He's a pediatrician. Michael Rich, thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you.
And Dr. Gene Barrison, executive director of MGH's Clay Center for Young Healthy Minds. Gene Barrison, thank you very much as well.
Thank you.
Radio Boston is a production of WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. And before we head off for the weekend, we want to say a special goodbye. Radio Boston's longtime executive producer, Mark Navin, is leaving our show for a different job here at WBUR. He's going to become the director of one of our national programs, Here and Now. And Radio Boston's loss is most definitely Here and Now's gain.
Mark helped build Radio Boston into the program it is today, and we're grateful to him for all of his work. We'll miss his constant good cheer, his steady guidance, his poise under what can sometimes be intense deadline pressure. Mark, we wish you success and fun in your new job, and we thank you for everything you've done for Radio Boston.
Our show is produced by Amory Sievertson, Dina Rosendorf, Alex Kingsbury, and Kathleen McNerney.
Tim Skog is our technical director.
And again, his last day as executive producer of Radio Boston is Mark Navin. I'm Sasha Pfeiffer.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. Have a great weekend. Join us again Monday for more Radio Boston.